Welcome to this podcast from the Medical Journal of Australia. My name is Sam Hunt, the MJA's news and online editor. Today we're discussing long COVID, and we're looking at the first Australian study of lived experience into long COVID. My special guest today is Dr. Danielle Hitch. Dr. Danielle Hitch is an occupational therapist and a senior research fellow at the School of Health and Social Development at Deakin University in Geelong and at Western Health in Melbourne. Dr. Danielle Hitch, thanks so much for joining me.
Oh, thanks very much for having me.
Danielle, you've published the first Australian study of lived experience into long COVID. What's the importance of having an Australian-based study into a disease of such importance?
I think the thing with lived experience is that it's very much within a context. So we have got some lived experience evidence from overseas, but that's in the English context or the American context. And living in Australia is different. We have a different health system, different conditions that people live under in a different culture, multicultural background actually. So it's really important to understand what the lived experience is for Australians, for Australian services to be designed to meet the local needs of the people we have in our community.
And it's quite a new concept, isn't it, long COVID? I've got the official name here, post-coronavirus disease 2019 condition.
Yeah, and it's interesting with the name of it because there are probably five or six so-called official names, but long COVID was originally identified by consumers and they called it long COVID or long haul COVID. So I think it's really interesting that official organisations have decided to call it something else, something longer and more convoluted, when most people know it as long COVID. So the study we did started back in October 2020. So Western Health has had a lot of experience during the COVID pandemic of, you know, high case numbers. And by October 2020, we were really clear that there were people who weren't recovering as quickly as everyone else and were having some really long-term problems. So we started a study doing narrative interviews with consumers. And a narrative approach is a really nice way to do it because you essentially only ask one question, and that is, tell us your story of your experience with COVID. So we went into it knowing that we really didn't know anything much at that point, and we just let consumers tell their story in their own way and their own words. So the article that's been published is based on the first 37 interviews. We've gone on to do, I think we're up to 90 now, and we've interviewed some people twice to really understand the experience of recovery over time. And, you know, using a qualitative approach to research is perfect for this because numbers don't tell all the story. People's words and experiences can only really be captured with stories. We're all hardwired to deal with stories as humans. It's a really powerful way to get access to people's lived experience.
And many of the people you interviewed had pre-existing conditions. What kind of pre-existing conditions were you seeing?
Pretty much everything. Being based in the western suburbs of Melbourne, there is a lot of pre-existing conditions, pre-existing disease burden out here. So we've had people in our study who had cancer, we had people with diabetes, people with asthma, people with renal issues, pretty much anything you can think of because it's a cross-section of the Australian population and a large proportion of Australians do have chronic and complex conditions. So probably the smaller group was probably those who didn't have any pre-existing conditions and were previously healthy. And that's because we recruited via PCR testing that was done at a hospital. So you are going to probably get a few more people that have pre-existing conditions through their links with the hospital.
And this was at a time in the pandemic when there was confusion about what long COVID was. What kind of stories were you hearing from people about the misunderstanding they felt in the health system?
I think there's, you know, the pandemic's been going for a while now and there's been definitely different phases. So I think the, you know, original cohort of people who were infected back in March 2020 had an experience where everyone was confused. You know, the world was turning upside down. Everything was changing at such a rapid pace. And that cohort, the early cohort of people with COVID, really didn't get any rehabilitation or very little because all the services were severely limited because of lockdowns, because of all of that. So they really didn't have access. And when they did have access, the approach from health professionals was often, we don't know, or people saying, yes, everyone's stressed, everyone's tired because we're all going through this. But, you know, not everyone was going through long COVID. And then it moved into a phase where there was a little bit more knowledge coming out, but the very nature of long COVID is that it's incredibly complex. It can affect any body system, any body structure. So it's very hard to have a consistent approach when every expertise, every specialty probably has to be involved across the board. So during that phase, people said they just felt forgotten and they felt a bit sad, really, that they sort of didn't have any answers. More recently, as it's dragged on, a lot of the people we've interviewed are actually really angry because they're thinking 2 years or 3 years into this, we should have more than what we have. We should have more knowledge than what we have. And so they're getting angry because they feel that, you know, health professionals are not stepping up. I don't think that's the case at all. I think we're working as fast as we can. And it is a hugely complex condition. But it's been interesting to see that shift in the stories and the sort of tone behind the stories over time.
It sounds like there's an enormous mental health and psychological part to all of this, not just with long COVID, but to people's experiences in the health system. What's the importance of validating people's experience and people's feelings?
Personally, I felt really frustrated by some of the stories I've heard where essentially the consumer's gone to get some healthcare and has been told, well, essentially it's all in your head, you know, it's psychosomatic. Even if it was psychosomatic, which it's not, people still need support with that. It's not as easy as just reassuring people and patting them on the back and sending them on their way. They know something's wrong and that's not going to go away just because someone said, oh, it's all going to be fine. I think it's really important too with long COVID to think about that context of we've all been through the pandemic. We've all been through lockdowns. We've all been through huge societal change. So it's really impossible to pull out what is due just to long COVID and what is due to what everyone else has gone through. It's crucial to validate people's experience because we have enough evidence now to say that, you know, there are biomarkers for some of these things. We know that the virus persists in the body. We know enough to say that, yeah, this is all absolutely real and has a huge impact on people. So if we want people to come and get good healthcare and we want them to seek treatment, it has to be validated. And I think a lot of people with long COVID have been really put off to the point where some have just disengaged from mainstream healthcare completely because they feel like, well, I'll go to the doctor and he'll just say, oh, you know, you're just old or you're menopausal or, you know, you're just a bit anxious, download a mindfulness app, for example. And that's not an appropriate response. So I think the mental health question's interesting. It's absolutely part of the picture. But unfortunately, especially in the early times, it was maybe put down to it all being due to mental health and anxiety and hypervigilance, similar to the message that is often given about chronic fatigue by some people. And that's pushed a lot of people away from healthcare, I think, which is really, really unfortunate.
My special guest today is Dr. Danielle Hitch, an occupational therapist and a senior research fellow at the School of Health and Social Development at Deakin University in Geelong. Danielle, you wrote recently in an article for Insight Plus where someone in your study was quoted as saying, long COVID gets really hard, but then you get better, but it comes back to hit you a second and third time. Tell me about those recovery trajectories and how different people recover differently.
It was interesting in the data we had then, and actually now we've done more interviews, it's still pretty much the same. Around a third of the people we interviewed recovered completely and recovered fairly quickly. And that tended to be the younger people who are under 30, which makes sense. And it's important to say our study didn't study long COVID as such. We study COVID recovery because it's important to understand all types of recovery, not necessarily just long COVID. So there was that cohort who, you know, had a sniffle and cough for a few days and got better. And then about another third described gradual improvement over time, but hadn't gotten back to normal. So they were slowly getting better. And when I say slowly, I mean for some people really slowly, but they could see that they were getting better over time. And then the last third of people were slowly getting better, but really did have episodes of relapse. So they'd slowly get better, crawl along like everyone else, and then they'd have a relapse for whatever reason. And then they'd have to get back up again to where they were and then keep going from there. So it's a much more bumpy path of recovery. And that's really hard to deal with in a healthcare system because the healthcare system isn't really set up for people who relapse and remit. It's hard to get back into a service. You might be on a waiting list for years at the moment because the services are so stretched. So it kind of fell into the rule of three. And that has been borne out by the extra interviews that we've done over time.
And in your research, you talk about the importance of somebody with long COVID returning to their normal, whatever that might look like, and possibly guided along the three P's of pace, plan, and priorities.
So pace, plan, and priorities is just one approach. I think with long COVID, there's multiple ways you could approach it. And because it's been so complex and we still haven't quite got a handle on, you know, a diagnostic criteria or something like that, you've got to treat things symptomatically. So this is an approach that uses, you know, a background in lots of other chronic diseases. So it's about encouraging people to sort of, as much as they can, plan out their activities and pace their activities so that they're not pushing too hard. One of the problems with pacing can be great, but if it's not supervised and it's not sort of done in a really effective way, you can push people too hard and then they relapse. So that system really encourages people to self-manage as well as much as possible. We can't assume that everyone can get into a health service to get access to specialist care. So people are on their own out there in the community doing the best they can. And that's actually an area that health professionals could get into a bit more, giving advice and giving some guidance for people to get on with things themselves rather than assuming that treatment has to always come from us, because it absolutely doesn't have to.
And Danielle, normal is such a subjective term.
I mean, what is normal? Only you can define what your normal is. And I think it's a real challenge when we're using sort of standardised tests or assessment to assess somebody's health, because what might be normal on there is not normal for that patient. I think that's particularly true if you've got someone who's younger and they were previously really fit and healthy. You might do some tests and it comes out as normal, nothing to worry about, but they're not back to where they were. So consumers are really clear about recovery for them, being able to say, yep, I'm fully recovered, is I'm back to my normal. And especially for our older folk, that's going to look different. You know, they're going to still be living with maybe some mild cognitive changes or some breathlessness or fatigue, but that's where they want to get back to as much as possible. And it's really important to get back to normal, because even if you're missing that top 5% of your function in daily life, down the track, if you go on to get heart disease or you have a stroke or you age, you're really going to miss that 5%. It's sort of a compounding effect over time. And for a lot of the consumers who took part, work was a really key destination. So once they got back to work, that's when they felt they'd recovered to some degree. I just want to flag, though, not everyone's working. You know, it's better probably to think about it as what an occupational therapist would call productive activities. So it may be something like going to school, or it might be some voluntary work. Childcare is a productive activity because it contributes to our economy. So it's not just about workers. I think a lot of the focus has been on healthcare workers, because obviously we're at higher risk of getting COVID in the first place. And so you have a fair bit of evidence about the impact on healthcare workers, and their return to work is complicated a little bit in terms of they're going back to the place where they caught COVID potentially, and COVID's in their face all the time. So we had some participants say that, you know, I just can't get away from it. It's constantly there. And that was really increasing their anxiety. But healthcare workers are a very specific bunch of people, you know, tend to be fairly well educated and, you know, they're working. And so if that's the only evidence we've got, we're not hearing from a whole bunch of other consumers in terms of their experience of returning to work. So if you're Bob the bricklayer, it's going to look very different returning to work than if you're a nurse on a ward, for example. So one of the big things that came out in our research, and is still an issue, is that there's a lack of access to vocational rehabilitation. So vocational rehabilitation is a very specialised approach to getting people back to work. We've got stories where people just went back full time and then crashed out completely because it was too much. Time where people had some support to go back slowly, step by step, but not all employers could manage that. And we've certainly got stories in our interviews of people who've just dropped out of the workforce, especially older people who've gone, well, I'll just retire because it's all too difficult to deal with the return to work documentation and the process. If you've got brain fog, trying to fill in 85,000 forms is not helpful at all. So there are people, we're losing people from the workforce. And that's got a massive potential impact on the Australian economy and productivity. So there's some research coming out of the UK that's particularly worrying, I guess. A lot of long COVID research is worrying, to be honest, talking about the impact on the national workforce of people not going back to work, not being able to do the productive activities that I talked about. We're losing that from the community. And in that way, it's a bigger problem than just people with long COVID. This really does have the potential to impact on everybody. So it's not just about these patients, it's about broader society as well.
Yeah, and if we can look at it at a society level for a moment, we've seen the great resignation or the big quit, where there's been a trend of people voluntarily leaving the workforce during the pandemic, not taking on new jobs. As an occupational therapist, what are you seeing in terms of society's change in its relationship to work since the pandemic?
There's so much happening in that space at the moment. We've certainly lost people from the workforce, and I have seen that locally in the healthcare workforce. It's really hard to recruit anyone at the moment, and I don't blame people. The last 3 years have been so tough. People can take their skills elsewhere. They don't have to work in public health. We want them to come back though. But I think also more broadly, you know, there's that whole thing of working from home, and it's been great for some people, but coming from sort of Western Melbourne and coming from a working class background, there's a lot of jobs where you just can't work from home. You can't sit on a laptop, you can't do it. And it was really interesting. I remember seeing a news story about, you know, the suburbs that most broke lockdown, and it was my patch. And I was sitting there sort of going, well, yeah, because we're the truck drivers, we're the abattoir workers, we're the, you know, the coppers, we're the firemen and all of that. So I think a lot of people are talking about working from home, that might be an optional 4 day a week work. But for a lot of people in disadvantaged communities or, you know, working class communities, that's just not ever going to be an option. So there are shifts in the workforce and the way that we work, but that's not going to happen for everybody. And what do we do for everybody else who's still working traditional 9 to 5 on the job sort of hours, especially when it comes to COVID and the risk of transmission and infection? You can keep yourself safe working from home, but you can't really do that when you're a face-to-face worker. So there's some really interesting issues I think we're going to have to unpack as a society as things go forward.
And to help unpack that, how important is it that people who have had long COVID are reimbursed for their expertise for research projects?
I think that really comes down to how we understand expertise. And I think the pandemic's given us an opportunity to shift that. I think part of the discomfort for us as healthcare workers is we're, you know, as you said before, flying the plane while we're still building it. We don't have lots of research and lots of evidence we can use to, you know, be experts. No one can be an expert in long COVID, in my opinion. And traditionally, you know, patients have been listened to, but I kind of feel like sometimes we listen to these stories and we all get the warm and fuzzies and then we go back and do exactly what we've always done. They're not necessarily in there at the decision-making stage of how we run our services, what's important, how we prioritise our resources. And if we're serious about saying that lived expertise is another form of expertise, we need to pay people for their time. Nothing annoys me more than when we expect consumers who already have a health condition and may also already be battling a bit in life to come and just give their time freely to make us better. And I think when you take that approach, you only get a certain type of consumer. You know, you're only going to get someone who can afford to give you their time in that way. There's also the thing about the cost of people sharing their lived experience. If you've had a really awful experience of COVID and a, you know, traumatic sort of 3 years for whatever reason, and you're telling that story, there's a huge cost to the consumer of sharing that information. And I don't think that's recognised nearly enough. So I think it's an ethical issue at the end of the day. If we're expecting people to contribute their expertise and we're not paying them for their time, that's appalling. Like nothing is worse as far as I'm concerned. We're all sitting there getting paid for our job. And it really gives that message that, oh yes, it's tokenism, that yeah, we really like to hear your story and, you know, well done you, but we're not taking it seriously because we're not paying people for their time. So for me, that's a basic fundamental thing that we have to do for, across all areas of chronic disease. And hopefully that's one of the good things that can come out of this pandemic, that we become more inclusive of lived experience, we take it seriously, and we co-produce models of care like we have at Western Health with consumers of long COVID, because we know that makes services better. We know that it makes things more effective. We know that it makes things more relevant to the people we're trying to serve.
Dr. Danielle Hitch, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you very much. It's been great.
Dr. Danielle Hitch is an occupational therapist and a senior research fellow at the School of Health and Social Development at Deakin University in Geelong and at Western Health in Melbourne. She has just published the first Australian study of lived experience into long COVID. You can find more podcasts from the Medical Journal of Australia on our website at mja.com.au or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks very much for listening.